Talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you statewide and live on Civic Media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits. All points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. Going right to the front lines of history in the making, and boy, was there a lot of it made this weekend. We start out with the drone attack. Killed three American service members. Three soldiers, three members of the U.S. Army in Jordan. Wounded, as of the latest count, more than 40, several of them quite seriously, and they had to be medevaced. There may be some more that reveal wounds. A lot of these are brain injuries. This is a drone. The drone came in probably from Syria. If you think of the geography of the area, Jordan bumps right up against Syria and Iraq. This is in northeastern Jordan. It's something like 10 or 12 miles from the Syrian border. And one of the things that's always concerned me, and think about this, we have about 2,500 military personnel in Iraq, about 900 in Syria. We have several 3,000 in Jordan, but they're at these little outposts. And this one, I think they call it Tower 22 or something like that, is a logistical base, directs intelligence. It only had a couple of hundred people, and it's 12 miles maybe from the border. It's inevitable that we are going to get more attacks as long as we do this in that area of the world. This was all orchestrated by Iran. All orchestrated by Iran. A couple of strategic geopolitical reasons for their doing it, and then I want to talk about what we should do to them. For one thing, they are a strong ally of Russia. Russia wants to attack the United States whenever it can without doing it directly. And it encourages Iran to do this. Iran is providing them drones to kill Ukrainians. This is a drone that came in. Somehow it got through the air defenses. You know, we have these air defense systems. Israel does. Ukraine does. We do. But think about this. Air defenses are only as good as their operation 100% of the time. If they win 99% of the time, but one missile gets through, one drone gets through, it's a failure. It's kind of like commercial aviation. When you get on a plane, you expect to fly safely and land. And in general, you do that. And our success rate for commercial aviation is 99.9%. But occasionally there is a lapse. And you can't have a lapse in this. Iran is petrified that the Sunnis of Saudi Arabia are very, very close to a peace agreement with Israel. Remember that the Islamic world is divided between Sunnis and Shiites. 90% of Muslim people in the world are Sunnis. 10% are Shiites. The dispute between Sunnis and Shiites goes back 1,300 years, and it's based on how you believe there should be a successor to the prophet. When he passed away, should it be a blood relative of the prophet or should it be a trusted lieutenant? And people took different sides of that, and that is why there's been this split for 1,300 years, and it's been characterized by extreme violence. Iran is deathly afraid that if Saudi Arabia, a Sunni nation with some of the holiest sites in Islam, were to conclude a peace agreement with Israel, they would be absolutely further marginalized. They're doing everything they can to interfere. And that was one of the reasons, you know, they support Hamas. They support Hezbollah in Lebanon. They support these proxies in Yemen, proxies in Syria, proxies in Iraq that they use to attack Americans. They're doing everything they can to disrupt it. In fact, the attack on Israel on October 7 was partially, maybe largely, directed by Iran because they were afraid. They saw the handwriting on the wall and they thought that Saudi Arabia and Israel would come to some kind of an agreement. And if that happened, that gives cover for Egypt. Well, Jordan and Egypt already have good relations with Israel, but with at least with these regimes, and the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Oman, all of the rest, and Iran would be isolated. Now, what should we do? I'll tell you what the mechanics are right now. Biden met with the National Security Council and with his top Pentagon security aides today. He did yesterday. And he's weighing what to do. What he's done in the past, when there have not been casualties, he's attacked, missile attacked these proxies in Iraq, in Syria. This drone did not come out of Jordan. Jordan does not have an indigenous anti-American military force that's trying to nail us. It came from Syria, and in the past it's come from Iraq, and it comes from Yemen. In my view, it's time to do more than simply strike back at the proxies when they've killed somebody, killed Americans. We can't tolerate that. Now, you could bomb people in Yemen that are doing it to our shipping, but we've done that. You could bomb, missile strike proxies in Iraq, but we've done that. And you could bomb or missile strike proxies in Syria, but we've done that too. If we attack Iran, this is an act of war on the part of Iran, in my opinion. Everybody is trying to pussyfoot around and say, well, yeah, they were involved, but you know, they fund it, but maybe they didn't know about this particular thing. That's a lot of baloney. They did know about it, and they exulted in it. Now, let me give you the descending order of things of what we could do. You could Hiroshima Iran. You could obliterate it. Iran is originally the Persian Empire. For thousands of years, it's been a thorn in the side of every civilization that's encountered it. It has done nothing of value that I can see throughout its history, certainly recent history. But not only is there a moral issue on that, if nuclear weapons were used, it might excite Russia to use them in Ukraine. Could excite China to use them. Pakistan would get nervous. And it would be a severe wedge in our NATO alliance and our other military alliances. So we can't do that. We could Dresden Tehran. Treat them the way we bombed Dresden in the Second World War. Level the city. We could do that. There would be retaliation from Iran. Some of our ships, the Persian Gulf, would be hit. There'd be casualties of ours. But you could hit every form of their infrastructure, their legislature, their leaders, their airports, their navy, their ports, their city. The problem with that is it's conventional weapons, but at the same time, that lays down a gauntlet, and it would dramatically escalate the war in the Middle East. What I think we should do, and I'm not alone in saying this, is there are certain targets in Iran that are long overdue for being attacked and removed. Two of them are they have drone factories. These drone factories supply drones to Russia to savage Ukraine, and they supply drones and they supply missiles to Hamas in Gaza, to Hezbollah, to Yemen. Where do you think these people have come up with their weapons? They don't make them themselves. They get them from Iran. So one possibility for a military strike against Iran is a massive attack on their drone factories, and frankly on their nuclear facilities, although many of them are underground, could be hard to get at. You can certainly bomb. You can bomb the entrances. We have bunker buster bombs that most people don't have. We could do severe damage to their airport, damage to their ports. But spare the civilian population, although there would be casualties. Other proposals are that we impose a blockade on them, like we did in Cuba back in 1962, when the Ruskies were going to be putting nuclear weapons in Cuba to threaten the U.S. mainland. That would be considered an act of war, but you could stop everything going in. You could mine their harbors. Or you could hit their proxies in a lot more lethal barrage of weapons, simultaneously in Yemen, simultaneously in Iraq and Syria. The idea is you don't want Hezbollah, which has several hundred thousand terrorists, to suddenly try to sweep into Israel, and then we would be involved in a war there. So what do you do? If we withdraw our troops from Syria, Iraq, in the Persian Gulf, our ships, in the Red Sea, you see what happened in Afghanistan. These cultures are fueled by hate, by and large. They're fueled by hatred of Western civilization, of Europe, of the United States, in the middle. The minute that you let the more terroristic elements just rise to the surface, you get Afghanistan. Simply merchants of hate who want to impose a caliphate around the world. So in my view, you've got to keep a military presence, but I don't think you need to keep 900 people in Syria exposed that way, or a couple hundred people in northeastern Jordan. You may need more, and you may need more immediate military response, and I think that's what Joe Biden is considering right now. Coming up, we're going to step away briefly, but coming up, Letitia James compares Donald Trump to Bernie Madoff. Trump responds, and there's a decision coming up. The gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Going right to the lines, Dave of Madison. Thanks for calling, Dave. What's in your mind today?
Well, you know, I think obviously there's just really, 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 really bad options. That's a Biden administration. Even, you know, horrific actions, I would say. Fundamental problem really right now. You really haven't mentioned much is Iran and their acquisition of nuclear weapons. Because look at what their network is doing all over the Middle East. You know, what are we going to do when Iran acquires nuclear weapons? And they get closer and closer as time goes by. They now have way, way, way more than a sufficient amount of enriched uranium to even to almost make a bomb. And we're going to really have to do something about that. I know there's a huge, huge threat from Hezbollah, but the Hezbollahs are only getting stronger and stronger and stronger. Now, they can probably launch missiles that can hit maybe downtown Tel Aviv skyscrapers. You know, it'll be a huge problem. But you can't just, you know, leave them there forever, because ultimately they're going to attack. They don't have those missiles for nothing. Iran didn't provide them essentially with military technology and weapon systems so they could be a conventional military for nothing. And because there's no, you know, defensive reason that Hezbollah is necessary if there's no war with Israel. You know, so I think once we, I think we're going to have to take on Iran eventually. It's inevitable. Do we want to take them on when they have nukes? Of course not. I think once we suppress their anti-aircraft capabilities, we can go after their tunnels, and you know, and we will have all the time in the world to do that as long as we have air superiority. So it's a horrible, horrible, horrible option, and a lot of people will die. But you let Iran get nuclear weapons, and then we'll really have problems. And then what do you think Saudi Arabia is going to do? Bahrain, Oman, Qatar, the whole region will be nuclearized, and I guarantee you there's going to be nukes detonated if we allow that.
That's a good point. Let me address that. It's a very important point, and I'm going to compare it to North Korea. North Korea was preparing nukes, and we knew they were. But North Korea has a real problem that Iran doesn't have. North Korea has a border with China, and North Korea is a client state of China. China busts the sanctions, gets some food and everything else. China right now does not want them to employ nukes, so they keep talking and they keep shooting their mouth off. But China, to some extent, constrains North Korea on nukes. That's number one. The thing about Iran is there's nothing to constrain it, and it's fueled by hate. It's fueled by sadism. Every year they have a Holocaust joke day where they make jokes about the slaughter of Jews in Nazi Germany. This is a sick culture. It's not a normal culture, and you're right, it's developing nuclear weapons and it's enriched uranium. Israel wants to strike it now. The United States has stopped that. However, if and when they finally develop nukes, remember, you also have to have a delivery system, and they're working on missiles and all of that. We have intelligence that knows, even in Russia, if it looks as if somebody's going to deploy a nuke. And the question is, how much in advance of that do you hit first? You want allies. The thing about this kind of a war, and it's true of any war, you want two things. I mean, you want allies, you want military superiority, so maybe three things: allies, military superiority, and the time you're choosing. Time has to be on your side. If we attacked Iran now to destroy its nuclear capability, they're allied with China, they're allied with Russia, even if we use conventional weapons, we start what would look like a preemptive war. We don't want to alienate NATO. We don't want to alienate France and Germany and the UK in particular. They're very vulnerable. They're very vulnerable because of proximity to Russian missiles. When you do it, you want the element of surprise. So you're going to bomb some friendly embassies there when you're going after this stuff. It is not an easy option. I'm less concerned. You say there'll be some collateral damage. Yeah, there will be. But, you know, when you go back to warfare, and especially in the last couple of centuries, go back to Sherman's sacking of Atlanta, the ultimate victory in war has always been with the destruction of the civilian cities of the other. Take a look at the Second World War, what we did in Dresden, in Cologne, what we did in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It took that to stop Imperial Japan and stop the Nazis from continuing their ideas of racial superiority. And people in the Middle East understand that very well. Look what Russia did with Chechnya. Look what Syria does this to its own cities, where Assad will buy, you know, cities is against him, stands up to him, and they'll destroy it. Kill 30,000 people. Father did the same thing. We have a different moral code. We are the West. We are Western civilization. We don't lightly do that. But I agree with you. Right now, there is one Islamic country that has a bomb, and that's Pakistan. So that is, in effect, a Sunni bomb. But Pakistan has a real problem. They have India right next door to it, which also has nuclear weapons, and they have China next door to it. China tries to make a rapprochement to be friendly with Pakistan, and for their pains when Chinese engineers go to Pakistan or Afghanistan, they're frequently murdered. All three of those countries are different religions and cultural backgrounds, and they're all very different from China itself. So there is some constraint on North Korea and Pakistan from using nuclear weapons. There's no similar constraint against Iran. You have to remember something else. Saudi Arabia hates Iran more than it hates Israel. Why is that? Because they are Sunnis and Iran are Shiites. But we need allies. Would the UK be willing to bomb Iran with us? Israel would be. Would Saudi Arabia be willing? They're not even willing to bomb Yemen, and yet they did for 10 years before this. Very, very complex choices. I will say that if Joe Biden decides to bomb Iran to put a stop to this and their arming of the proxies, what's going to have to happen is, in addition to going after their drone factories and some of their infrastructure, he'd also have to go after their nuclear facilities with bunker busters and other technology that we have. And as far as Hezbollah is concerned, remember, Lebanon was originally supposed to be a haven for French Christians. And the minute there was an influx of people like Hezbollah, they became militant, military, attacked people, murdered them, and they are a terrible force on the border, and they're going to have to remove too. The question is, how much are we willing to do right now? And that is going to be Joe Biden's decision. Coming up, a lot of news, a lot of weather. We'll talk about Letitia James, and we're also going to talk about access to the Texas border by the U.S. government. Coming up. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're on a couple of things. First of all, Letitia James, closing argument. This is in front of Judge Engoron, fraud case, where she's asked for about $370 million as a penalty against Donald Trump and bar him from business in New York, the real estate business, for his life. A death blow to him, to his business interests. And in her summation, and I thought this was very good, and normally it might not be effective, it just sent him to the moon, he was so angry, compared Donald Trump to Bernie Madoff. You may not remember Bernie Madoff, but I represented a guy who had been swindled by Bernie Madoff, and on his behalf we were trying to get his money back. But in any event, Bernie Madoff had a multi-billion dollar fraud, and believe it or not, what he would do is he would pretend to buy securities, people would send him money, and then he'd just keep the money, do whatever he wanted. And if anybody wanted to redeem, then he'd use money. It was a Ponzi scheme. He'd use money that had come in from other people to pay them off, and so suddenly the stock market went down and he got caught. But he is kind of the poster child of securities fraud, of the worst of the white-collar criminals. Now, normally, if you say something like that in closing argument, it can look so over the top that it hurts you. People go, oh, come on. Donald Trump is fraud on the hoof. Donald Trump is a walking crime scene. So comparing him to Al Capone isn't over the top. If you do it in front of a jury, there's some judges who will try to shut you down on it. But remember, this is a bench trial. That means there's no jury. Judge Engoron is the finder of fact as well as the guy who decides on the law and the application of the law to the facts. And that isn't because Donald Trump was somehow euchred out of a jury. Donald Trump waived a jury. You can waive a jury. And his genius lawyers, Lena Haba, and there was a great meme that went around, said with a picture of her, said, hire Lena Haba. She'll plea bargain your speeding ticket to first degree murder. And that's basically the opinion lawyers have of Haba. In any event, for some reason, these idiots thought, well, we'll give up a jury. And the judge, of course, will see the the good about Donald Trump. Well, no, El Rongo, he doesn't see the good about Donald Trump because there is no good about Donald Trump. So Trump filed a brief objecting to being compared to Bernie Madoff. And, you know, the response to that is Judge has been around the track. You know, he did not fall off the turnip truck on the way into town, okay? And so he goes, all right, people say stuff. There's no jury here. Tell me why you're not Bernie Madoff. And the idiot Trump in this brief goes, well, Bernie Madoff did this and I did that, but you're only saying that I did this. And I mean, you know, that's not the kind of judgment or decision you want to get into. At most you might say they're over the top. But he made a federal case out of it. He wants to create an appeal issue. But then he went after Letitia James, Trump did, and Judge Engoron. And you might say, look, going after the judge that's going to make the decision because there's no jury, are you out of your mind? Well, though this be madness, yet there's method in it. The Bard was correct. Though this be madness, yet there's method in it. So there's a series of social media posts on Sunday. Today's Monday, 24 hours ago, social media posts in advance of the verdict. Called it a witch hunt again. This is not America. He said Letitia James is corrupt. And then he says she sat comfortably and confidently in court with her shoes off, arms folded, a Starbucks coffee, and a big smile on her face. And then he said falsely, he said, just like she knows exactly what the decision will be, end quote. If you want to tick off a judge, I don't know why you'd want to do that. You want to take off a judge. That is a primer. That's 101 on how to do it. Calling a distinguished attorney general who is elected by the people of New York corrupt really gets hackles up, because if the judge does anything against her, he doesn't want to look as if he's verifying it because it's false. Well, she sat comfortably and confidently because she done a hell of a summation. We'll close our argument. I'd sit comfortably and confidently too, and have on many occasions. With her shoes off, I doubt it. I've never seen a lawyer take their shoes off in court. Arms folded, fine. So what? A Starbucks? I doubt that very seriously. Nobody brings food or some. The only thing you drink in court is water that's provided by the court in pitchers with paper cups. So the criminal defendants, because this used to happen in the past, would break a glass and then try to hold it to a juror's throat. So you have paper cups and water. That's it. Period. End of case. Big smile on her face. Fine. She gave a good summation. But then he says, just like she knows exactly what the decision will be. She doesn't know anything. She's asked for $370 million. She's proven fraud. The clown Trump has continuously berated the judge personally, berated his clerk to the point where she's afraid to go home at night in the subway, berated Letitia James. Yeah, she probably feels pretty good at her position. I do too. Then he called the case rigged on Sunday, again, a hoax on Sunday, and said her closing argument was pathetic. Let me tell you something. If he thought her closing argument was pathetic, why is he going off on this? It was not pathetic. It was a very good one. Then he called Engoron badly influenced, which is a sneaky way of hitting at his clerk again, which he's barred from doing because of the gag order. You know, this is a performance that is designed to anger a judge to such an extent that if there's any hint of nuance or mercy, Trump's not going to get it. Engoron is an ethical judge. He's a good judge. He's not going to do anything that's not supported by the evidence. But she believes, Letitia James, that a $370 million penalty and barring for life from the New York real estate market is warranted. And if it is, under the facts, as Judge Engoron listened to him, and obviously I haven't listened to every fact in that case, but I think there's a strong argument to be made. And if it is, he'll do that. And then Trump thinks he's somehow, what, creating an appeal issue by trashing the judge? You know, the appellate judges are judges, too. They don't like to be trashed, and they take care of their own if their own are honest. They don't take care of their own if they're dishonest. But if they're honest And I can't imagine a dumber thing to do. The final thing I'll say about it is that he obviously was doing it for his base. But who is his base? His base is a solid group of people, nowhere near a majority. And New Hampshire showed that he does not have a base among independents, does not have a base among moderate Republicans, doesn't have a base among Democrats who are more moderate and would look at a Republican who is honest, who's not a thief, is not sadistic. I know the bar is low, but I mean, you know, not a thief, not sadistic, and didn't want to destroy our democracy. Maybe a Liz Cheney, but he ain't Liz Cheney. The old adage, Liz Cheney's a friend of mine, and sir, you are no Liz Cheney. That has been flogged a lot. I want to go to the Texas border. This is unbelievable. Unbelievable. We have arguments being made now by these states that have not been made since 1861. Here's what's happened. The Biden administration has demanded access to the Texas border to take away the razor wire that the Supreme Court ruled, even the six tarantulas ruled. Obviously, the administration has the ability to do that because of the Supremacy Clause and the fact that things like immigration and things like the border exclusively in the provenance of the federal government, not the states. This is what was at issue in 1861. So Texas is blocking access. They will not let federal agents, which are in this case ICE and the Border Patrol, near their border in certain areas. Abbott shoots his mouth off, the governor. He's auditioning for vice president with another complete lunatic, hater of America, somebody who has said he'll shred the Constitution if it gets in his way, Donald Trump. Abbott threatened Biden and said, quote, don't federalize the National Guard, suggesting that what? Suggesting that what? He'll use what? The Texas Rangers and the Uvalde police who distinguished themselves in Uvalde, the Chicken Hawks who wouldn't go in and let him kill 19 I think it was fourth graders and two teachers. This happened in 1861. And listen to the arguments. Listen to the arguments that Abbott is using. And believe it or not, many, if not most of the other Republican governors in the state are standing with Abbott. This is a constitutional crisis in the making. What they are saying is an argument that was used by the Confederacy in 1861 to secede from the nation. It's identical to the language that South Carolina used in 1860 in its declaration of secession and its attack on Fort Sumter. And it's this, it says, the U.S. government has broken the compact between the United States and the states, broken the compact, and therefore that compact and the Constitution is over. This is 2024. This is 160 years since the Civil War. All of these states have thousands of federal employees. All of these states are living under a constitution where the President of the United States is the Commander-in-Chief of the armed services, that he can federalize any National Guard. Eisenhower did it in Alabama in the late 1950s. I think it was 1958 when Alabama used the National Guard to block black students from trying to enroll in the University of Alabama, despite Brown versus Board of Education. And Ike said, all right, he snapped his fingers. He said, you're federalized, stand down. Think about this. Think about the ramifications. Think about the things that Biden has to decide right now, and thank God Joe Biden is the president. Not just whether to bomb Iran, not just trying to negotiate an aid package of Ukraine to stop Russia, but he's facing two virulent enemies immediately. One of them is the government of Iran. The other is the Republican Party in the United States, a party This is a party for 10 months, wouldn't promote admirals and generals. This is a party that won't fund the government except for small tranches and not pay our troops who are being killed in the Middle East. This is a government that is about to impeach Mayorkas, the head of Homeland Security. This is the government, this is the Republican Party, who criticized Biden. Half of them criticized him for fanning a war in the Middle East, and the other half of them criticized him for not doing enough against Iran. The Republican Party, especially through its leadership, is a clear and present danger to the United States. And what they're doing right now at the border, what they're doing at the border, by denying access to the troops of the United States, the agents of the United States, the Border Patrol, is treason. Now, in a different environment, Biden could order the armed forces down there, federalize the Texas National Guard. If they didn't arrest them, arrest the governor, Lincoln would have done that, Grant would have done that. What if the Texans start to shoot our soldiers? Should we shoot them back? We don't want this. We're stepping away very briefly. I see you on the line. Do not hang up. Do not hang up. Coming up, we're going to talk about this a little more. Take your calls, and I'll tell you about a group called the Army of God, 1,000 trucks going down to the border. Coming up. All the time. It's getting better all the time. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open at 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Bob Madison, my friend, thanks for calling. What's in your mind today, Bob?
Well, I'm wondering about this deal. Trump's trying to kill this bill, and I don't think it's going to work that way. The bill is to to help all our democracies across the world, Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan, particularly, and if you stop that, you reward all of Trump's friends. Oh, isn't that nice? But the problem is the sweetener was the border deal, and the Republican senators took that seriously. And they really have what they say they have. They'll never get a deal like this. The Democrats won't go along with this without all the other things attached. And they know that. So I think they're going to keep pushing and pushing and push this bill through. And if they get it over to the House, there's always a discharge petition, it seems. Or they may just roll them with the political pressure. Congressman Chip Roy was on a C-SPAN a couple times recently complaining that it's a do-nothing Congress. We've got to have something we can run for re-election on, and this is it. And they got to realize at some point that Trump isn't everything. Their own re-election is more important than Trump.
Yeah, thanks for the call. And we're going to get to that in a second about the bipartisan nature of that thing. I want to set up right now exactly what's happening down on the border and why it's so necessary to get that thing passed. But you have Republican governors, and not just Southern governors. Remember, you have governors who are Republicans in South Dakota. You have Republican governors in Iowa, for Pete's sake. These Republican governors are all standing with Trump, and they're all standing with Abbott, repeating an argument that was put to rest in the 1860s. There was a Supreme Court opinion after that, and they considered this question: do the states have a right to secede from the Union? Now, you may think, come on, Matt, I got that in high school history. Well, yes, you did. But up until Abraham Lincoln, that was an open question. And a lot of people, thinking back to 1776 and then 1788, said, well, the states went into it voluntarily, but they can also withdraw. And they can withdraw over slavery or anything they want, because the Constitution talked about slaves. They talked about counting, say, slaves or Indians as 3/5 of a person. And it's pretty clear that there was a compromise in slavery. So they had Lincoln coming along who looked like he might be an abolitionist, although he wasn't as fervent as some people initially. And they, oh, hey, we have a right to secede. The U.S. Supreme Court, after the Civil War, ruled as a matter of constitutional law, the states do not have a right to secede. There is a secession party that's active right now in Texas. But this business of, quote, the U.S. government has broken its compact with the states, the compact is dissolved, and they can do whatever they want. That was resolved between 1861 and 1865. That was resolved in a U.S. Supreme Court opinion in the 19th century. It's time to stop, guys. It's time to put a stop to all that. So what do we have? If Biden sends troops down to get the Border Patrol to the border, and the Uvalde police, the Chicken Hawks, but, you know, the Texas Rangers or whatever they call themselves, stand in the way, Biden federalizes the National Guard. What if a shot rings out? What if a shot rings out? You can't have that. Biden can go back to the U.S. Supreme Court. The six tarantulas, I think on this one, they would quake in their boots if they went with Texas on this one. So they give a declaratory judgment. That'll take months. Months. The Republican Party is a clear and present danger to the United States. Any Republican who talks about, well, maybe the election was rigged, but, or you are betraying the country. I don't want to hear from you. I don't want to talk to you. Get out of my face. I'm tired of treason. I'm tired of this kind of stuff, threats of violence from Trump and his running dogs who are threatening the United States. We're going to the lines. I'm going to take you in order. Mark from the SAC, thanks for calling. What's in your mind today, Mark?
Yeah, I'm wondering if that would be a violation of an Article 4 of the Constitution, Section 3, which refers to that, can any state be combined with other states to form a new state or split off pieces of states? It goes on, without consent of the legislatures of the states concerned, as well as that of the Congress. So that unless they get approval of the full Congress.
Look at Mark, even if they get approval of the full Congress, this has been decided. It was called the Civil War, and it was a 19th century thing, and all this stuff about the legislatures have to approve if the UP wants to be part of Wisconsin and all that has nothing to do with it. This is absolutely a violation of the Constitution itself, what these people are trying. Dick of Madison, my friend, thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Dick?
Matt, you know, last week when Trump was saber-rattling, too, over this border thing and just obstructionist crap, and he was calling for red states and Texas, you know, to take over and take charge of that, wouldn't that be an act of insurrection right there?
It would. That's treason. Right, but here's the problem. Think about this. There's such a thing as political legitimacy. Somebody like Dwight Eisenhower just won the Second World War. Everybody thought he was God. The Democrats even wanted him as their nominee in 1952. Right now, Joe Biden is a superb president, but there is not the unification, there's not the unanimity in the country as there was in the 1950s. In the 1950s, there was a handful of Southern states that didn't like it, but everybody else was in sync with Dwight Eisenhower. Now there's tremendous disagreement sown by Trump and the Republican Party unconstitutionally, criminally, in my view. Biden has to tread very, very carefully. We don't want a circumstance where American troops are firing on Texas National Guard after Biden federalizes them. Biden has some very, very tough decisions to make, and depending on what he decides, I think this will salt the presidency away for him. Get rid of the traitor Trump. the traitor Trump belongs in prison. We're coming to a lot of news, a lot of weather, and then this bipartisan border deal that Bob Madison was talking about. I want to get into that a little more because it may come to pass. Coming up.
Will stand my ground, and I won't back down. No, I won't back down.